We'll primarily be looking tonight in some of the thoughts of the book of Numbers. We looked at human history, the book of Genesis primarily, and saw creation, saw sin, the fall of man. But then the Bible didn't leave us there. In the leadership of the Holy Spirit, Moses penned the book that we call Exodus. And in the book of Exodus, we see deliverance and redemption. Literal deliverance from Egypt, but spiritually a picture of the deliverance that we find in Christ, Moses being a type of Christ. In Leviticus, we see that relationship with the Lord growing, and at the end of Exodus, he gives the law and the tabernacle. The law to remind us how to obey God, and the tabernacle to remind us and teach us how to worship God. And in Leviticus, that thought is continued on, and we see that moral walk that a child of God should have, and how that moral walk will affect our relationship with God. And Leviticus is talking about that separateness that needs to be in our lives. And the closer we walk with the Lord, the more that we have sweet fellowship with Him. And in the book of Leviticus, the ceremonial laws and the feasts and the things that God prescribed for them at that time remind us how important that morality is in the service of the Lord, and how that is so crucial to our fellowship with Him. And then what we have to that point in the latter part of Exodus and then through Leviticus, we realize we're only dealing with the first year and a couple of months after the leaving of Egypt. You have from Exodus 19 on to the end of the book, giving of the law and the tabernacle, and then all through Leviticus, the giving of the feasts and the ceremonial laws, that's all covered in the first year and a couple of months of their time after they left Egypt. And then Numbers will cover primarily the rest of that 39 years in the wilderness. They were in the wilderness 40 years. And if the latter part of Exodus and the beginning of Leviticus covers about a ballpark year and a half, you got 38 and a half years that they were wandering around in the wilderness. And we'll see that tonight with the Lord's help. The book of Numbers is a twofold emphasis. Number one, it's named after the two numberings of God's men of war. Those that were 20 and up that could go to war were numbered early in the book and then later in the book. And we'll look at that. And not only is it a book of numberings, or census we would call it today, but it's a book of wanderings. In chapter 33, it's just a recount of all their wanderings around for the last 38 or 39 years. Don't run back to 33 though. Go with me to Numbers chapter 1. Numbers chapter 1. And we'll look with the Lord's help some glimpses of the emphasis of the book of Numbers. And the first numbering is commanded by God. Numbers chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day, notice this, the first day of the second month in the second year. So the second year is just beginning. It's the first day of the second month. They've only got one completed month into the second year. And so it's just past the first year. And he says in verse 2, "Take ye a sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel after their families, by the house of their fathers, with the number of their names, every male by their polls, from 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel. Thou and Aaron shall number them by their armies." Now the end of chapter 1, verses 44 through 49. Turn with that with me and read this. "These are those which were numbered." Of course, the interlude that we skipped over is the recounting of all the tribes and all the numberings. "These are those that were numbered, which Moses and Aaron numbered, and the princes of Israel being 12 men, each one was for the house of his fathers. So were all those that were numbered of the children of Israel by the house of their fathers from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war in Israel. Even all that were numbered," here it is, 600,000 and 3,550. "But the Levites after the tribe of their fathers were not numbered among them, for the Lord had spoken unto Moses, saying, Only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel." Remember the tribe of Levi, of which came Aaron, and they served in the tabernacle. The sons of Aaron as high priests, and down through that lineage, and then the rest of that tribe served as ministers in the tabernacle. But number them all, and the number is 603,550. Now, we have a second numbering later in the book. It's a number we'll look at in a little bit. It drops by 1820 when that numbering has taken place. Some would ask, why did the Lord number? And that question was asked of me, and I thought about it for a little bit. I said, I don't know. I have never thought about it. Sometimes it's the simplest questions that makes our minds kind of run. And so I began to think about it, began to read and study on it. And I think the first reason that God told him to number the men of war, they went into Egypt just a couple hundred years earlier, 70 souls. They came out of Egypt, 603,550 fighting men. What was one of the promises that God gave to Abraham? I'll make you a great nation. There's going to be a bunch of you like the sands of the sea. And I think the first reason for the numbering is that he's showing how that he fulfilled his promise and how that they multiplied in Egypt. 603,550 fighting men from 20 years old and up. The other thing that I think is going on is that they were identifying the men of war that were mature and ready for battle. And that'll be key in a minute. And thirdly, if you remember Exodus chapter 12, back up, hold your finger here in Numbers, and back up with me to Exodus chapter 12, and let's remember something that we might have slipped our mind since we've been back in Exodus. Verse 36, Exodus 12, 36. "And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them such things as they required, and they," that's the children of Israel, "spoiled the Egyptians." It's a military term. They were victorious and they had the spoils of war. And the Egyptians just gave them so much and said, "Here, get out, quick." "And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth," notice this, "about 600,000 on foot that were men." Well, that corresponds with our 603,550. "About 600,000 on foot that were men," besides children, "and," verse 38, "a mixed multitude went up also with them in flocks and herds and very much cattle." What I believe the mixed multitude has reference to would be some of the Egyptians that would have maybe some had made marriages with some of the children of Israel, and they came out with them. Maybe there were a few we would call proselytes and like that. And so the numbering of the fighting men of Israel from 20 years old and upward might be in part to separate in the minds of the people those that were Israelites and those that were part of the mixed multitude, reminding them of who's God's child, who's God's people. Now, the one thing you want to keep in your mind, I believe, is this. The first one, God's just showing his promise. The second one, identifying the men of war that are mature, 20 years old and upward. That will be key in a minute. So, back to the book of Numbers. We'll come back to that thought. But in chapter 9, in verse 15, chapter 9, verse 15, on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, namely the tent of the testimony. And at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until morning. Of course, a pillar of cloud by day. You remember the story, I'm sure. But notice that on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle. And so, verse 16, so it was always, the cloud covered it by day, and appearance of fire by night. And you go down through here, and it just reminds everyone that God's in charge. God's leading. God is the one that says, time to stay, time to pack up and move. And this, the rest of chapter 9 is just saying, well, look at verse 23. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in the tents. At the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept charge of the Lord. They kept the charge of the Lord. At the commandment of the Lord, by the hand of Moses. So they were doing exactly what God told them to do and when God told them to do it. Chapter 10, verse 11. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month, in the second year, that the cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. So we realize here that it's been 2 months and 20 days. And the cloud is taken up, it's time to go. That the cloud was taken up of the tabernacle of the testimony, and the children of Israel took their journeys out of the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. And they took their, and they first took their journey according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. And so this was the journey's beginning. The cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle and began to move. So, now jump with me to chapter 11. We've just started the journey. We're just leaving Sinai. The tabernacle has just been raised up, and after a short period of time, the cloud says, God says through the cloud, time to go. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. And when the people complained, it distressed the Lord. The Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost part of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Tiberah, because the fire of the Lord burnt among them. And the mixed multitude was among them, fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Now there's a couple things in this text. Notice that the fire was kindled and it consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. And I brought this out before, I'm sure, that that there would be those that were huddled up close. Remember, the tabernacle sat right in the middle of the camp. And three tribes to the north, three tribes to the east, three tribes to the west, three tribes to the south. And the tabernacle was the center of their lives. God was there. And there would be those that were right there, close. God moving? Is the cloud moving? Is the fire moving? Make sure you tell me. I want to know. There'd be those that would be right there. And then there'd be those that are out on the edges going, I hope he doesn't move. I'm tired. And they didn't care. They were out on the fringes. They were just kind of going along for the ride. And they get to murmuring and complaining. They weren't close to the Lord. They weren't keenly aware of what he was doing and really didn't want to be. They were just out on the fringes, hoping they could just hang around for a while. God sent a fire out and consumed them. Consider that briefly. Consider the Lord's view of those that are not, those of his children that are not close to him, utterly consumed with him, and desiring to see him moving and desiring to be right there, ready to move when he moves. Versus those that, you know, yawning over there. Oh, I hope he doesn't move today. Think of the difference. And God hasn't changed. God hasn't changed. He still has those that are out on the edges just kind of going through the motions in disdain, no doubt. He still is not pleased with that group out there. And is well pleased with those that are close and hungry to follow him. And of course, we read in verse 4 that right there again, who give us flesh to eat? The complaining begins within probably a month of their journey. Well, they don't have a long journey to go to get from where they are to Canaan. Chapter 13, verses 1 through 3, they've reached the edge of Canaan. And we're only talking a couple months, okay? From the time they left Mount Sinai to there, they're not a long period of time at all. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers, ye shall send a man, of every ruler, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran, and all those that were heads of the children of Israel. And it goes on in names. The tribes talks about those that were being sent. And now, and God didn't tell them to, he didn't tell them to go and see if you think we can take the land. I mean, you know, he didn't tell them to say, okay, you got 603,550 men. Calculate this thing up and see if you can take the land. He did not tell them to do that. He said, go see what I gave you and send one man from each tribe. At the end of chapter 13, verse 25, and they went and came to Moses and Aaron and to the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, and said, we came into the land whither thou sent us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. Caleb could see where this was going in verse 30, and he stilled the people. Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger and mightier than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying that the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And they went through and saw again the list of those. They saw the sons of Anak, which come of giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Oh, it's a great land, but we could never take it. Chapter 14 continues on. Notice, and I want you to notice verse 1 and 2. "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and people wept wept that night." All the congregation. As a general rule, the thought is that the whole outfit sighed and cried and said, "Oh no, what do we do?" "And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, 'Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness.'" This is just a couple of months from starting their journey from Sinai. Just a couple months after the tent's been raised up, the tabernacle's been raised up, and the cloud started to move. And they asked the question in verse 3, "Wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain and let us return to Egypt." And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defenses, or the defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not." So Joshua and Caleb, two of the ten. A lot of times you talk about getting a consensus and getting the majority and, you know, going with the majority. Do you realize most of the time in the Bible, God's in the minority? I mean, the people of God doing the right thing, they're in the minority. Caleb and Joshua in the minority. Ten said, "We can't." And the whole outfit believed the ten. And I want you to think about those 655,000 fighting men. They were in there. "We can't do it." Remember the men that said, "What about our wives and children?" Look at chapter 14, verse 26 through 29. "And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, 'How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, you have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Notice, I believe, we stumble across one of the reasons for the census. That God points out to them, of that great number of fighting men that doubted him, that great number of fighting men that said, we can't do it, that great number of doubting men that saw more of the children of Anak than they saw of God, thought more of them than they thought of God. And he said, your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Notice verse 32 repeats it, but as for you, your carcasses shall, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. God said that 603,550 fighting men, or at least every one of them that doubted God, well, no, that the whole generation was to die from 20 years old up. That whole generation was to die. The first census was to identify the fighting men, reinforce the promise of God, that he kept his promise, and kept it marvelously. 70 souls in total to 603,000 plus in a couple hundred years. But he said, you're all going to die. Everybody 20 years old up, you're going to die. 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, your carcasses will be strewn all over this wilderness because of your unbelief. In chapter 26, he then takes the second census after the end of that wandering in the wilderness. We've now covered the rest of that 40-year period for the most part. Chapter 26, God tells him to number them again, verse 51. These were the numbered of the children of Israel, 600,000 and 1,730. 601,000. 600,000 and 1,730. So 601,730. It's the difference of 1,820. That's all the difference, 1,800 people less. All that time in the wilderness, God's promise remains faithful. Their numbers remain basically the same. Might even remind you that in chapter 25, just the previous chapter here, 24,000 died because of God's judgment upon them, falling into a trap that was really a spiritual and religious trap that the native people had set up for them, and the men of the children of God went for the women of the surrounding areas, and then not only fell for their women, but fell for their gods. And God said that the men of the children of Israel committed whoredoms with the children of the land, and he killed 24,000 with a plague in the previous chapter here in chapter 25. The judgment of God was made very manifest. Unfaithfulness is never beneficial. The lesson that we can take away from this is that unfaithfulness causes trouble for the child of God. Unfaithfulness is a black eye to God. Unfaithfulness is something that displeases God. We're at the end of the book of Numbers. God gives instructions again to a new generation, chapter 34. We won't read it. It's in it's instruction, an instruction for the children of Israel as they come into the land. Look at just the first couple of verses. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come into the land of Canaan, this is the land that shall fall unto you for an inheritance, even the land of Canaan with the coast thereof. And he goes on and gives instructions on how they were to occupy the land. Nearly 39 years of wandering had come to a close, and we cover the rest of that journey through the Numbers. And they're getting ready again to consider taking the land that God gave them. But I want you to remember that group that said, we can't do it. I want you to remember the trouble that caused, because they doubted God. They doubted God's word. They doubted God's ability. They got their eyes off of God. And they said, oh, I can't do it. The one key evidence that a person's profession is real is the fruit of faithfulness. Just sticking to God. Just staying faithful to God. Keep on keeping on. That's the one key evidence. I used to be the clerk at Faith Baptist Church in Wauseon. And for about 10 years, I kept a record of those that came into the church. Just on a legal pad, separate from the actual church clerk book. And on the one on the left-hand column, I had the name of everybody that had came before the church, made a profession, transferred by letter, whatever, 10 years. On the legal pad, it was the whole left-hand column. On the right-hand column, I took their name, the date that I had to take their names off by discipline or by they moved away or whatever. And after 10 years, there was no net additions to Faith Baptist Church. With a whole left-hand side of the legal page full of names that had one point started and said, God is real. And I believe God is adding me to this group. The only thing that makes their profession hold water is faithfulness. And those that just dropped by the wayside, I know some moved away, but those that just dropped by the wayside and stopped going altogether, it's hard to have any confidence that their profession was real. John said, if they would have been of us, they would have no doubt remained with us. One of the key tests that what you say you have in your heart is real. Do you stick to the stuff? Do you stay faithful to God? God, help us to pray for one another that each one of us stay faithful to God. Because look at Hebrews 13. This is the New Testament commentary. I'm sorry, Hebrews 3. This is the New Testament commentary on this very passage back in the book of Numbers. The writer of Hebrews comments on it. Hebrews 3, verses 8 through 13. Harden not your hearts as in the day of provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness. When your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. They didn't listen to me, God's saying. And they, what does he say? Saw my works, 40 years. I told them their carcasses would be strewn all over the desert, and they saw it happen. Their hearts were hard. Verse 10, wherefore was I grieved with that generation, and said, they do alway err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren. Now it's today. Now it's not an Old Testament story anymore. It's now. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we were made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. The proof is in the pudding. Holding steadfast to the end. And what God calls upon each one of us to do is to encourage one another and pray for one another and, as he puts it, provoke one another. Be a cheerleader, one for another. Say, come on, keep it up, you can do it. May God help us to take a lesson from children of Israel in the book of Numbers. Keep our eyes on God, follow him closely. I heard a fellow say, we should be, and I repeated it and I said it at camp, we should be walking so closely to God that when he stops, we bump into the back of him. We should be right there. God help us. You pray for me, I'll try to remember to pray for you, that we stay right there with God. It pleases him. And we know in Matthew 6, the promise is associated to putting him first, keeping him first in our lives. May God help us. Let's go to our prayer groups.